It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond along with Kyle from what city you're in now, sir?
I'm in LaGrange.
LaGrange, all right, you're there. All right. Hey, Bubba Rosenbaum.
What's going on, guys?
Hello, Bubba. Lots going on. It's a good night to have a good time, and we're going to have fun talking about Pirates. And, Bubba, before we get started with our roundtable, I know that we've got two great guests tonight.
Yeah, we do. We're going to catch up with East Carolina's longtime track and field coach, Kurt Kraft. And we'll talk with him about his incoming recruiting class, how the indoor and outdoor seasons went this winter and spring. And then we'll also catch up with Jason Romano from the Sports Spectrum podcast. Prior to working with the Sports Spectrum, he also was with ESPN for nearly two decades. And here recently, Bob Lee retired after 40 years with ESPN. So we'll talk a little about that and some other things with Jason Romano.
Yeah. Jason's a good guest. We've had him on twice now. Definitely stick around and listen to that. Even if you should be familiar with Jason Romano, but if you're not, y'all will enjoy hearing that.
It's good stuff. Speaking of good stuff, very proud of our Pirates. The program going very, very well. I love.
Yeah, we didn't lose anything this week.
That's right. That's exactly right. We're undefeated this week, and feels good to have all the programs going in the right direction. It feels good to have a athletic director who gets it, and also how about a football coach in basketball. All the coaches we have now are on point. They're doing a phenomenal job recruiting. Oh, my goodness. The recruiting for basketball is complete as far as this current season, but it's coming. But as far as football is concerned, man, having that December early signing day pushes everything back.
Yeah. And football-wise, guys, did y'all see we had an interesting offer, a cornerback out of, I believe it's Independence Community College, or Independence Junior College, who has verbaled to Toledo, committed to Toledo back in the spring, but then never signed. He never signed with Toledo for whatever reason. Coach Houston just offered him, and it would if he commits, it would be this year's signing class. It sounds like he would enroll for the fall.
Where is he from, Kyle?
I believe it's Independence, either junior college or community college.
Okay, yeah.
So he had verbaled to Toledo, and for whatever reason, never signed. I don't know if he was holding out for a Power 5 offer, and hadn't came by this point. But evidently, Houston's trying to get him to sign. So he's a sophomore, so he'd have 2 years of eligibility left if he does come here.
Well, that would be incredible to get him, and we're going to keep our eyes on. This is the most I've followed recruiting, and each year it seems like more and more, and the fact that we have Mike Houston here, and they had
that would be for this year, Dave. That would be, unless I'm misunderstanding, and I could be, but that sounds like that would be for this year's, for the signing class that
for 19.
For this fall.
Oh,
yes,
oh.
Yes.
Oh,
Bubba, if you can, you might want to double-check me on that over on Hoist. But I'm pretty sure.
Well, that sounds even better. So you're getting we had a couple more scholarships, I think, left for grabs. So that'll be awesome.
Forget it, man.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We'll see. I tell you what, I'm tickled to death about the indoor practice facility. I know that's something that a lot of people are talking about. Mike Houston with, I'm proud of him for coming in, really taking the bull by the horns and going now full throttle. I tell you, they're going to – you give this staff 2 or 3 years especially, wow. By year four, it's no telling how great this team's going to be.
Yeah, Coach Houston's doing a good job so far, and, he's doing a good job recruiting. And previous stops have indicated that – we've got nothing to do but go up from here with Coach Houston and staff, and I'm ready for the season to start, guys. Bobby, if you're looking for that thread about the kid I was just speaking of on Hoist, I believe it's called something like Interesting Recruiting Offer or something along those lines.
Gotcha.
All right, and while we're on the topic, I'm going to throw this out at you, Kyle, because I want to see what you say. As far as amenities for our Dowdy Ficklin, name some stuff you want done. If you're the athletic director, what would you do?
As far as amenities for Dowdy Ficklin, I'll just tell you from a fan standpoint, maybe what I think needs to be done. I think it's time for a new scoreboard.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to see even more recognition of former players in the stadium and bowl games. I think we need to modernize the underneath the stadium, the concession stands area.
By the way, you read my mind. Gilbert said I was the first person to mention that to him. I just found that kind of odd.
It needs to be modernized. I'd like for there, you know, be nice, and you know, I don't know what the cost would be, but it would be nice to have some TVs down there at the concession stands where you could see the game while if you're waiting to get a drink or something.
It'd be cool to have some kind of video board or some kind of thing where
like a jumbotron thing. Like down there. Yes, you can just look over to that'd be awesome. That would be, you know, some of the things I'd like to see done. How are we going to, you know, beer and wine sales, guys? That's something we hadn't got into.
Kyle, before we dive into that, that JUCO DB 6'2", 200 pounds, Trey Fullwood. He's originally, I believe, out of Tampa, Florida. And like you said, had that Toledo offer, and he's out of Independence Community College out in Kansas.
Wow.
So that is for the 2019 class.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, that's the biggest thing. So what are your takes on, I'll let you guys go first, on Governor Roy Cooper did the right thing and signed the bill into law where we can have beer and wine sales. We're pirates. We love pirate beverages. Kyle, I'll let you go first. What do you think?
It's increased revenue. I don't think it's an issue because people drink and get drunk off their ass before the game out in the tailgate lots. So I think people that want to get drunk are going to get drunk. I don't think it's going to make a difference really in terms of more people being drunk because, you know, you got people that sneak stuff in. You got people that, you know, will just leave at some point and just go out there and start drinking again. And then you got people who just get blistered before they come into the stadium. So I don't think it's going to change anything in terms of the amount of people that are intoxicated at the games. What it will do is increase revenue. You're going to have, you know, let's say we got 40,000 people there, and then let's say 10,000 of the 40,000 purchase alcohol. And let's say they purchase two drinks each, 10,000 people. And let's say those drinks are, God almighty, $10 a piece probably. We'll do that math. There's a lot of money to be made there. So,
Go ahead, Dave. I'm sorry.
I was just going to chime in. I'm not against I said that before. I'm not against the law changing like they've done. I just want people to kind of – any revenue we make is great, but I don't think it's going to be as much as what people think. But it still will be great, better than what we had, so I'll give it that. But I think people think it's going to be all this, like a whole bunch of income. I think a little bit of income will be correct. There's a lot of logistics to work out, as John Gilbert talked about with Troy Dreyfus on Pirate Radio Live a couple days
ago. Why is there logistics to work out? I don't understand that. Unless we're going to have sections of the stadium that doesn't allow alcohol, then there should be no logistics. If we're going to have sections of the stadium where alcohol isn't allowed, then yes, there are logistics to work out. Otherwise, I don't know. Are we going to limit the amount of alcohol that are going to be sold? It's going to be sold.
You can't. Yeah, they'll have stuff like where you can't buy it in the fourth quarter. I'm sure that kind of stuff. They'll shut down alcohol sales in the fourth quarter.
Now, is it going to be, did Gilbert say we're going to be ready to go by Gardner-Webb?
I didn't hear him say that was a definite yes.
He didn't say definitively. He did say that the Board of Trustees are meeting here in the next couple weeks, and that obviously would be voted on there. And then depending on that vote, which you would expect to be yes, then they're prepared to put it in to practice and make it a reality of the season.
Yeah, I think, it's a potential.
Something that annoys me, I had a coworker come up to me the other day and ask me what I thought about East Carolina maybe starting to sell alcohol at the games. And I told her, I said, well, you do realize that it's not East Carolina. It's a change in state law, and it will be all universities that will be selling alcohol at the games. And she said, oh, I didn't realize that. And I didn't, you know. And it just shows the narrative that, and I get it to a point, that you know, locally the narrative is told from East Carolina's point of view. But we need to be clear on things like that in the media, WICN, WNCT, WCTI, to the casual viewer who doesn't follow college athletics or university activities in general, that we're making it clear that it's not East Carolina that it's going to start selling. It's not ECU, the party school, going to start selling beer and have their students get drunk at the games.
Oh, Wake Forest has had beer at their games.
Correct, because it's not a UNC system school.
Right, right. That's
Yes, but I'm saying this is directed towards no one listening to this podcast in terms of fans. This is directed towards the local news stations to make sure when you're talking about things like this that you're very clear that it is all schools in the UNC system that can now sell alcohol. It's not ECU, you know, because that's just a little pet peeve of mine, how people get things confused like that. And it's not even really their fault. It's the fault of the local media.
Yeah, I think the very fact they've got to, as far as the beer and wine, I mean, and by the way, I want to get your guys' thoughts. There's actually people that are against this, so I thought that was really interesting.
I mean, that's kind of what I was just indicating.
I mean,
they're called Baptist.
Well, I'm actually a Baptist, but I'm not. It depends on
you're a Haftist. You're half Baptist or a half-ass Baptist.
You know the old joke. They said the Baptists are the ones that come in the back door of the ABC store.
You know the difference between a Baptist. You know the difference between a Baptist and a Presbyterian.
What's that?
Presbyterian to speak to you at the liquor store.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. I don't have a problem with the law. My only concern is let's wait. It's kind of a wait and see for me about how much revenue. Like I said, any revenue is better than what we had, but I think there's some people that are like pie in the sky. They think that it's going to be like this huge number, and I just want people
to
kind of.
Well, what's a huge number to you, Dave? I mean, what's a huge number to you?
Like millions and millions of dollars. I just don't see that happening. Maybe I'm wrong, but.
Well, I mean, let's say it's. How much do you think they're going to sell a beer for the game?
$10.
$10 a beer, okay.
In fact, I did a. Did you see that? With Cliff responded to me from Clip Rock about. I said, "What's the over under as far as like beer sale? Like as far as the cost of a beer?"
Right.
And I put $10, and he said a little under. I think it's going to be around that price. They're doing that to make money.
Troy's been saying $5.
There's no way.
No. Water is $4, Troy. Come on, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I wasn't saying I was necessarily agreeing. That's just what, I mean, he's been saying $5, and he's talking about how if it wasn't $5, that if it was more than that, he would probably not be partaking.
I got an idea for you guys.
What's that?
We have the Temple game, and what night is it on?
Thursday.
Yeah, we'll have Thursday. We'll
I don't think that's a good idea. No, I don't think.
That's a joke. I'm not advocating that.
You're not going to do that? I didn't know you were in charge of beer sales.
I am actually. They come through me. Yeah,
that's interesting.
Actually, I'm the associate AD for beer sales now.
All right. Well, that's a good title.
And Kyle from LaGrange Barber. Bubba Rosenbaum, we're actually working on this together on on how we can do this, how we can pull it off.
Next up, well, never mind. And, Kyle's
got a liquor, a table full of liquor out in the parking lot that he's selling liquor sales out there. What do you think?
Liquor? I don't even know her. Let's say it's $8 a beer. And, okay, Dave, back to your point of revenue. Okay, let's say it's $8 a beer. And then let's say we sell 5,000. We'll be real conservative. 5,000 beers sold at a game. Well, I mean, that's what is $40,000?
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, you do that six games out of a year. I mean, that's you know, that's a good
thing. My idea. I've already told you my idea that's year round for the stadium.
Drink year round?
No.
Oh.
I think we should have a
sports bar and grill.
Sports bar at the stadium. That way we could go there year round, watch the games. If you're there at the stadium,
you know, it's not a terrible idea, Dave, actually.
And then that way you have money coming in all the time. The whole bunch of people would go there and watch games, and then you could actually watch the game at the sports bar while it's going on. I don't know. I've always thought that would be a good idea. And then that way you have a use for the stadium year round. Like, if somebody always will be there. Kyle's going to do a new podcast from there, from the sports bar, right?
Absolutely, Dave. Whatever you say.
All right.
While we're running around here, maybe we should get to a guest.
Yeah, let's go to a guy that and one of the great coaches at ECU, Bubba.
That's right, Dave. We're going to go to Kirk Kraft right now, longtime track and field coach at East Carolina.
Bubba, a coach at ECU that we've been wanting to have on quite a while now. We've worked out our schedules, and glad to have him on, right?
Absolutely. Down through the years, East Carolina track and field has been very lucky to have a lot of longevity in terms of coaching. First Bill Carson, and now head coach Kirk Kraft, who's entering his 16th season, if I'm not mistaken. Coach Kraft, welcome in.
Well, thank you very much, man. I'm glad to be here, and I'm excited to share a little bit about who I am and where I come from and talk about Pirate track and field.
Coach, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, how did you get into coaching and how did you get into track and field coaching? I wanted to start out there. So for people that don't know you, we could get a little background.
Absolutely. Well, you know, throughout our lives, there's always people that that impact us and touch our lives, you know, throughout our path. And, you know, I can name on about two hands people that have affected me and people that have impacted me. But why I got into this and how I got into this was I was a track and field athlete in high school, in basketball and cross country. I was a hurdler. I ran the 110 high hurdles in high school, the 300 hurdles in high school. Well, I had a great high school coach that impacted me tremendously. And I got recruited by a local college, Minot State University in Minot, North Dakota, to run track and field. And I knew that when I graduated from high school that I wanted to go in to get education. I knew that I wanted to be a teacher coach because of my high school coach on how he impacted me. And so I got recruited by the local college. I was a conference champion in college, a high school state champion and in high school. And then, you know, from there, my college coach ended up impacting me so much that, you know, I knew that I wanted to move on someday and be a college coach because of him. So basically, the long answer short is people have impacted me along the way. I knew I wanted to be in the educational system. I knew that I wanted to be a high school teacher coach. And I thought someday I wanted to be at the college ranks. And so I got my master's degree at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln and then moved on to Nevada, Reno, stayed there for 14 years, and then I landed here 15 years ago. So that's how I got into it.
Well, that's definitely a great resume, and I know you've had great success as a Pirate, but before we do in the current, can you talk about the I know you got a chance to spend time with them, and we'll talk about the event, the Bill Carson Invitational, but
Can you talk about Coach Carson? He was actually, Coach, I didn't tell you before we started the interview, I'm actually a graduate of East Carolina in 95, and he was the track coach then, and it wasn't last year that I graduated, so, but can you talk about the impact of Coach Carson?
Absolutely. I got hired here by Coach Terry Holland. He was the athletic director at the time, but I got hired here in the fall of 05, and I got a chance to work alongside Coach Carson. He was the men's coach at the time. I was the women's coach at the time. But him and I were together for the 05-06 academic year and for the 06-07 academic year. And then he had stepped down in October of 07 and decided to retire. But I did get a chance to spend 2 years with him, a very, very comical, hilarious, good-natured, a wonderful coach. He had obviously 40 years of tradition here. Had some great 4x1s, some great 4x4s. His wife still lives here in town. But as we know, Coach Carson passed away a number of years ago. But long story short, when people thought of East Carolina University track and field, it was synonymous with Bill Carson, that they kind of went together like bread and butter, kind of like, you know, peanut butter and jelly. It was Bill Carson was East Carolina, and East Carolina was Bill Carson. So when he passed away, we decided to name a meet after him, and we have had the Bill Carson Invitational since the spring of 2014, which has gone very, very well, as you guys know. So we put a name in his a meet in his under his name and recognition for everything that he has done over all those years. But yeah, wonderful man.
It's great to have that because there's a lot of those of us that are first generation Pirate, obviously graduates, that we have our children now that are coming to Pirate games and events and stuff. And so it'll be great that I can introduce the name Bill Carson and obviously yourself, but it's great to, for them to know about the legacy of him. And
absolutely.
Then, and he passed the baton to you. And
yep.
let's talk about the current state of things. Before we talk about the future, can we talk about last season? And since we're having you on now, can you kind of give us a recap of what happened, and then we'll talk about the future of scheduling and different things?
Absolutely. You know, one thing that's unique about our sport, guys, is that, you know, we have 20 sports here at East Carolina University. We are 6 of the 20, and a lot of times people don't understand that, but we are 6 of the 20. I repeat that. And we have cross-country in the fall with men and women, and then we have the indoor track championship, men and women, and then we have the outdoor track championship, men and women. So we have 6 championships, 3 on the men's side, 3 on the women's side, and we're 6 of those. So last fall, meaning the fall of 18, we were 6th on the women's side. We were 8th on the men's side in the league. This past year, indoors, we were 7th on the women. We were 8th on the men, and then outdoors, we were 7th on the women, and I believe we were also 8th on the men. So, you know, it's a very good league, a very good conference, a very competitive league. You know, as you guys know, we used to be in Conference USA, and then moving to the American has been an adjustment, obviously, for the whole athletic department. But it's been a good adjustment. These schools that we're with now, obviously, are very competitive. And we enjoyed this league very much. But I can tell you, it's hard to win a conference title. I don't care what league you're in. The goal is always to win a conference championship. And we were very fortunate to do that in Conference USA. We had won 3 championships in Conference USA. We won the 2012 indoor, and then we won the 2014 indoor and outdoor. So we were fortunate to have some success in that league. But it is what it is now. And we're enjoying this conference.
Coach, one of the questions we had for you about the current roster is, do we have anyone, I know down through the years, and I think this was just prior to your arrival, I may be mistaken, but, you know, LaShawn Merritt, who was so good in the 400 meters, and then I think others as well that we've had compete in the Olympics or attempt to qualify for the Olympics. Another one, I believe, is Avion Jones, who's a high
Correct.
Jumper.
Yep.
And then I know there's another one or two whose the names don't come to yep. mind right now, but talk about some of those and then anybody that we may have currently.
Well, over the years, as you just mentioned, you know, I've been here for 15 years, going on my 15th year here this fall. And one thing about our sport, you know, we've got 21 different events. You know, you've got the 100, the 200, the 400. You know, you've got relays, you've got the discus, you've got the javelin, you've got the high jump, you've got the hammer. You've got a lot of different events. And to your question, you know, Avion Jones was one that really, really stood out. He was a wonderful young man. He transferred in from VMI. He was at Virginia Military Institute, and he transferred in, and he was an Olympic trial qualifier. He was a five-time All-American. He was a five-time conference champion. He had a personal best of 77 inches that he did back on May 13th, I think, of 2016, and that was at the conference championship meet. But he's an example that has put us on the map. Another lady by the name of Tynita Butts that was from Northern Virginia, she was a wonderful high jumper for us. She was a seven-time Conference USA champion, a six-time All-American. She stands out. You know, we've had numerous athletes throughout our career here, and regardless of what event it is, that has done a very, very nice job for us. You know, LaShawn Merritt, I think that's one of the names that he was here back in. He left school in 2005, but he was here the fall of 2004 and then left in 2005 to become, you know, professional track and field runner. So we've been blessed with some of the people that have come through here. And, you know, those ones that do a very, very nice job, you have to kind of cherish those moments because you just never know when they're going to come along again.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I know. This incoming signing class that was recently announced, I was browsing it on ecupirates.com. Yep. I believe 25 signees and something like maybe mistaken, a state or two off, but something like eight states accounted for. And then you had quite a few, of course, from North Carolina, and I'm in the Charlotte area. So one of the top sprinters I saw that we had signed is a guy by the name of Royal Burris from Harding exactly. University High School. He I think he finished third in the state in I think the 200 and 300 meters. Is that correct?
That is correct. No, I'm glad you brought that up. Royal Burris is from Harding University High School in Charlotte. He is a sprinter. To your point, we brought in 25 new people. On the men's side, you know, they're from Virginia, they're from North Carolina, they're from Kentucky. You know, but basically a lot of North Carolina kids. We got a kid from Audrey Kell High School up there in that Charlotte area. We've got kids on the team from Southwest Gilbert and Greensboro, from Cary, from D.H. Conley, from Kinston. So it goes up and down the map. On the women's side, you know, we've signed kids from Kentucky, New Jersey, Virginia, Florida, South Carolina, New York. So we've really worked that Eastern Seaboard really, really heavy. But to your point again, one of the big things that's a priority to me is to make sure that we recruit North Carolina kids, because we got to remember where we're from. And we got to take care of our own state first. And if you don't take care of your own backyard, then I don't think you're doing the right thing. So overall, of those 25 people, you know, I would think we probably have, I don't know, 16 to 17 of those from the state of North Carolina.
And Coach, I want to ask you, as far as recruiting purposes, how do you, like, is that something you guys do? I guess just like any other sport, you travel the roads, you're flying or you're driving in a car, or going to different high schools looking at kids?
Absolutely. One of the things that, as you guys know, this social media world that we live in nowadays, everything's at our fingertips. Everything that you can, you can look things up. You can, there's scouting software. There's different websites that you go to. But to your question, yes, we are in and out of vehicles more so than flying, but we do fly to different places to see kids. But it's more of jumping in that car, going to Virginia, jumping in that car, going to South Carolina, jumping in the car, going up to the Charlotte metro area, going in that car to, driving to New Jersey, driving to
Pennsylvania too. So we're logging the miles, and you know, I'll be 58 years old in December. But that recruiting is the lifeline of what you do. If you're not recruiting, I mean, great kids make great coaches, as you guys know. And if you're not constantly replacing the kids that you lose, that's the lifeline of any program. So, you know, you're only as good as the kids that you surround yourself with.
Coach, recently we were very excited to have a longtime Pirate, Udon Cheek, your sprint relay and hurdles coach on, and he was actually headed to Greensboro there a couple days later recruiting. But can you talk a little bit about Coach Cheek and then also the rest of your staff?
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up, because you're only as good as your weakest link, and you're only as good as the people you surround yourself with. But yeah, Coach Cheek ran back, I think it was in the late 80s or early 90s, or maybe it was the mid 90s. He ran for Coach Carson. He was a 400 hurdler for Coach Carson. You know, his blood is literally purple and gold, as you guys know. You know, he has sang the song Purple and Gold, and I think he's come up with some other East Carolina purple and gold things. But Coach Cheek, he is starting his starting my 15th year. He is starting his 12th year, and he is an ECU alumni. I've got a lady by the name of Bree Berkowitz that's starting her 7th year on our staff. She was a former athlete of mine. She's from Pennsylvania. She was a pole vaulter. She coaches our pole vault group. Coach Price is my throws coach. He's a Western Carolina graduate. He's going on his 17th season and works with all of our throwers, our shot putters, our discus throwers, our hammer throwers, our weight throwers. And then we got a new guy that's been with me now going on 3 years by the name of Jeffrey Artis. He was a great athlete at Virginia Tech. He was a long jumper, triple jumper, hurdler. This is his third season. And then lastly, my distance coach is a guy by the name of Josie Weaver, and he's starting his fourth season. And he is also a Western Carolina grad. He coached at Butler Community College in Kansas. He coached at Murray State, and he heads up our cross country and distance program. So I've got wonderful assistants. I'm blessed in that fashion. But I will tell you this, that with stability and continuity comes success. So if you are stable and you have continuity, which, you know, I just read off a long list of coaches there that have a lot of stability and continuity with years that they've been here. I think that is one of the things that turns into a successful formula. But yeah, God bless all those assistant coaches. We're like football. You know, we have a lot of coaches. You have a D-line coach. You have an O-line coach. You have an offensive coordinator. You have a defensive coordinator. You got a running back coach. You got a quarterback coach. Well, that's what we are. We have six of them. And then there's
Coach, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, obviously, you talked about the Bill Carson Invitational, how successful it's been over the last, I guess, six seasons now. And I've heard some discussion about this. Maybe it was when you were on Pirate Radio or 94.3, but you were talking about the potential of maybe hosting the second event down the road.
You know, that's something that we have been in talks with our administration and my sport administrator, that, you know, that one, that meet, that it goes off very well. You know, the fans love it. We've always been fan friendly, and we've always been region friendly. You know, we've had Wilmington here, we've had Charlotte here, we've had Troy here, we've had the Citadel here, we've had South Carolina here. This year, Winthrop's coming. We've had St. Augs here. So we try to keep it fan friendly and regional friendly. And what I mean by that is that, you know, those teams that are coming here are just a short drive away. So I think that helps keep the interest. But to your question, that is something that we would like to do, is have another meet. We have a cross-country meet in the fall, a track meet in the spring, but we would like to add another track meet someday.
Coach, one of the questions I had, and I know this is such a broad, generic thing, can you talk about with your athletes, I know there's different types of training, but can you talk about, to give Pirate Nation an idea about how long, I know it's a year-round thing, but how much in-season, off-season workouts do the guys and the ladies do?
Well, and that's a great question. One of the things that we're a year-round deal, you know, not that the other sports aren't doing year-round, but as I mentioned to you earlier in the interview about 10 minutes ago, you know, we have two championships in the fall, two championships in the winter, and two championships in the spring. And the one athlete, that distance runner, that cross-country athlete, they never get a break because they're running cross country in the fall. And then that same athlete is running an indoor championship and an outdoor championship. So that kid is constantly in season 9 months out of the year. Wow. The track and field athletes are obviously practicing in the fall, but they are actually in season January through June or January through late May. So our season does get very, very exhausting. You know, not to minimize what the other sports do. But when soccer's over, it's over. And, you know, they do fall training or, you know, spring training. You know, when basketball's done, they're always working out, obviously. But with us, we're constantly in competition season, having all those championships. But my heart really goes out to that young lady or that young man that's a 10,000-meter runner or a 5,000-meter runner. You know, they're constantly doing something without a break.
Speaking of a 5,000-meter runner, I know Nick Cha-Cha, I believe that's how you pronounce his last name, he's been very successful, correct?
He sure has. Nick Cha-Cha, that's funny you bring his name up. He's got a twin brother by the name of Andrew. They're from Pathtown, North Carolina. And if people don't know where, I think I pronounced it right, Pathtown, R.J. Reynolds High School.
Pathtown.
Pathtown, I called it Path. Yeah, Pathtown. It's up in the Winston-Salem area. But Nick and Andrew are both, you know, they're twin brothers. And Andrew moved on this year. He graduated, and he'll be moving on with his life. But Nick is back. He doesn't have a cross-country season, but he's got an indoor and an outdoor season. But wonderful man. Has set numerous school records for us. Nick has got the 3,000-meter run record for us for outdoor. He's got the 5,000-meter run record for us outdoor. And then I believe he also holds the 5,000-meter record for indoor as well. So he's on three records. He's a great leader. He is on our SAC committee. He is an ambassador. He represents well. If you're going to have somebody represent you with that pirate logo on your left chest, it's Nick Cha-Cha.
That's really cool because I know, like we were talking about, the many different pirates over the years with that saying. Future-wise, Coach, I wanted to ask you about when you're talking about the Bill Carson Invitational. Can you give us an idea of? I know you said you had a cross-country event coming up in the fall. Can you give us kind of some dates ahead of time, or are we just going to have to wait?
Absolutely. Our cross-country meet, we hold it out at Lake Christie. Parker Overton, I don't know if you're familiar with that name, but Parker is a friend of the university, both academically and athletically, and Parker's been around for a long, long time. Well, he's got this property out there east of town, and it's called Lake Christie. There's two lakes on it. He named it after his daughter. His daughter was a championship skier back in the day. But we do host the ECU Cross Country Invitational on Friday, October 18th, is the cross country meet that we host, and that's out at Parker's Estate.
Coach, I know earlier when we were talking about the signees, and then you were talking about how we had, I think it's like three from Lexington, Kentucky. I was noticing some of those times were some of the best in the state of Kentucky's high school history.
Absolutely. And that, you know, again, it's funny you bring that up. You guys are pretty versed on this stuff. I'm impressed here. The Lexington, Kentucky group is we got a gal by the name of Rosalind Hollingsworth that's going to be in our team. From Lexington, and we also got a girl by the name of Jenna Strange. She's a distance runner from that area. So Jenna's the distance runner, Rosalind is the sprinter, and then on the male side, we have a guy by the name of Austin Matthews from Lexington, Kentucky. So we landed three from that area, and you're probably thinking, how did you land three people from Lexington, Kentucky, all the way to Greenville, North Carolina? Well, it's relationships. It's called recruiting. And Coach Weaver and Coach Cheek both came in contact with a couple of the coaches up there. Coach Cheek has family in Lexington, Kentucky. So we got into these homes early on. They came down for a visit. They loved us. They loved the university. They loved the facilities. So that recruiting all goes back to relationships again. So, you know, why here? Why ECU?
because they believed in us and they enjoyed this area. So they are all three really, really good athletes. We look forward to having them here.
Yeah, Coach, I'm very excited to have them. And I tell you what, we are just tickled to death to have you here, and I hope that you can be here 40, 50 years. He'll be outstanding as a coach for track and field.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's very nice of you to say that.
Appreciate it very much, and good luck. I know there's never an off season, but certainly we'd love to have you back on before the event at Lake Christie and for cross country. And it's been great to catch up with you, to get to know you a little bit, and hopefully we can meet you in person soon.
No, I appreciate you, Bubba and Dave. Thank you, guys. Anytime you want to reach out to me, I'm here for you guys. And that's what this is all about, is getting the word out, and people like you guys that are doing a great job of spreading the word. And there's so many positive things that happen across the landscape of athletics. I know sometimes we have a little hiccup here and there, and, you know, one bad apple kind of ruins the whole barrel. But there's just a lot of great things going on in college athletics. And I think in closing, the thing that we have to remember is that we're here to impact the student athletes. And one of the things that one of my goals is I always want them to have a great experience after their 4 or 5 years they've spent at East Carolina University when they leave here. So that's very important to me, that while they're here, that they're having fun, the good clean fun, that they're having fun enjoying their sport, and that they can move on and get a job someday and graduate with that degree.
Well, absolutely, Coach. We appreciate you coming on.
All righty. Hey, if I can help you guys in any way, you let me know. Go Pirates.
Appreciate it, Coach. It was fun.
Are you still there?
Yeah, we're still here. Thank you so much.
Was this good? Did this go well? Was this what you were kind of looking for?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
It was awesome.
Good.
And when will you guys run this?
In the next, 2 days, Bubba, 3 days?
Yeah, sometime over the weekend. And, Coach, I will certainly I'll mention ECU Track and Field on Twitter. And just like when we put Coach Cheek's interview out, and then we will we'll text and email you a link as well.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, that's anytime we can publicize East Carolina University athletically or academically, I think that's a wonderful thing. But, yeah, get the word out. Get this thing out there.
Thank you very much, Kurtz. And he did a fantastic job there and talking about the recruiting, a whole bunch of stuff that's going on for the program. And definitely a great guy. We love all that he's done, really the continuity. I mean, when you have Bill Carson for 40 years and now you have his soon-to-be 16th season, just tells you the stability of the program, nationally known track and field team, potential folks that are going to the Olympics in Tokyo next year. It's just a lot of great things going on there. So we wanted to show him some love, and there we go. And, you know, one of the big sports stories, Kyle, this week was Bob Lee, the 40 years at ESPN. And so we thought a guy that's been there with Bob and actually worked with Bob closely outside the lines, Jason Romano, producer at ESPN. He's since left the last 2 years ago. But let's go to that interview with Jason that we did earlier right now. Well, with the news of Bob Lee from ESPN, one of the original anchors and one of the original employees, the third day of ESPN, that he joined the great organization, the worldwide leader, we thought we'd have one of our favorite guests back on, right, Bubba?
Yep, Jason Romano from the Sports Spectrum podcast, who previously spent nearly a couple decades at ESPN, rejoins the show. And Jason, welcome in.
Dave, Bubba, Kyle, great to be with you guys. Thanks for inviting me back.
Yes,
thanks for coming back.
We knew that this day would probably come, but we were hoping that for selfish reasons, as much as I am a big fan of Bob Lee and ESPN, that he wouldn't retire. But we thought with the, I think it was a 6-month sabbatical, that he probably would. And we found out this week, so we wanted to have you on. Have you had a chance to talk to Bob? Can you tell us maybe why, or do you, I guess it's just the right timing to leave after 40 years?
Yeah, I have not talked to Bob. I sent him a note, certainly sent him a note on Twitter as well. Reached out about a month ago or so, and Bob and I exchanged emails, and he told me he was feeling fine and There was no health issues, which is what I was concerned about because we hadn't seen him on TV for so long. And, yeah, I think he's just it's time. I know he's got a couple grandkids, and he loves those grandkids and, you know, wants to probably spend time with more time with them. And I think when you go on a sabbatical, you know, can learn a lot about yourself, and that was probably something he learned was I want to spend more time with my kids and not be sort of entrenched in the sports world. I think he still wants to do things, and he's still super talented. It's not like, you know, his fastball has lost a lot of speed on it. He can still bring it. And so I hope that he picks up somewhere else. Maybe he does a podcast, you know, something that he wants to do on his time, on his level. But yeah, it was surprising, but not surprising, I guess, when I saw the news.
When you do something for 40 years, it's become a time where it's just time for a change. And like you said, he took that 6-month sabbatical, and he was kind of testing the waters to see how retirement fit him, I'm guessing. And I personally think it's great that Bob is retiring while he still has good health. He's not one of those people that you see, you know, you find out that they passed away, and, you know, we get to see him go out still doing great things. And like you said, hopefully he'll continue working in some capacity, whether it's on a podcast or talk about the new media out there. You know, I'm sure Netflix will maybe like some Bob Lee documentary type stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he went on Outside the Lines and did one last show a couple days ago. And, you know, quite honestly, I'm just saying this, I don't watch a ton of ESPN shows anymore. I it's not that I don't like them. I don't live in that world anymore, and I have other things that I do. So I watch a lot of ESPN when there's games on. But this one I made sure I tuned into, and he was on with Jeremy Schapp, and it was a wonderful half-hour tribute to Bob's career. And, you know, the one thing he said was, you know, he's got some calls from his alma mater at Seton Hall and opportunities to maybe teach and you know, give back a little bit and impart that knowledge onto others. And I got to tell you, if I was a student at Seton Hall and Bob Lee was my professor, that would be an amazing opportunity to learn from one of the best in the business. So, yeah, I don't think he's done. I just think he's going to be able to work on his time and you know, do his own thing now. So,
and when you think about the worldwide,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Dave.
That's okay. I was just going to say, when you think about the worldwide leader, I wanted to ask you that very thing. What's it like, because you've worked there, how intense is it? There, the worldwide leader, is that a factor in too that he did it for 40 years of the daily grind? I was thinking about that a couple of days ago. It must be pretty intense there.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, the standards are high. You know, like I liken it to, and I don't know what this is like, but I'm guessing it's like working for, you know, a place like the Dallas Cowboys or the New England Patriots in sports. You know, I'll stick to sports, or like Facebook or Google or any of these really big organizations that, you know, expect excellence on a daily basis, which we should all expect that. But when you have a number of eyeballs on you, and I certainly think from Bob's perspective, you know, I think he understands, you know, he's as humble a guy as you'll ever meet, but I think he understands that he was carrying a legacy with him for many years. You know, he started on day 3 of ESPN's existence, and Chris Berman was there for, you know, I think 2 weeks after ESPN came on. So I would walk around ESPN and see those two and think, I got to do my best, and I got to keep this thing going in my little small tiny part because of what those guys paved the way for. And just hearing stories and hearing what it was like back in the day compared to, you know, what it was like when I was working with them, and even now, you understand that there was a grind, that there was a time when they really were paving the way in many ways, not just at ESPN, but for the whole idea of sports broadcasting and the national level of it, the network level of it. And Bob's a pioneer, and he'll be missed.
What I was going to say, guys, is just when I think of Bob Lee, we've talked about Outside the Lines, and I guess he did that show for, what, right at 3 decades or close to it. But I really think of even more so than SportsCenter, probably. And I think
Bubba, you're cutting in and out on us, my friend.
I'm sorry?
You're cutting in and out on us on your line there.
Okay. You got me now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But when I think of outside the lines, I mean, you think of Bob Lee and just vice versa, and I think he was made for that show and that investigative style of show and the hot topic issues or whatnot. And he just seemed perfect for that show.
He was. I got to work on that show, Outside the Lines, for 4+ years. I came on in late 2003. I got a job as a talent producer. My first assignment was Outside the Lines. I was hired for that show. And I worked on that show from 2003 to 2008. And every single day, I would go into a meeting, and Bob Lee would sit there. And we would have 4, 5, 6, 7 other producers in there, and we would talk about what we were going to have on the show that day, what guests to go after, how to put a show together and what the content would be. And I was fortunate to line produce about 50 shows with Bob on Outside the Lines, as well as booking that show. And I'm eternally grateful for just being able to be, in many ways, a fly on the wall, although I wasn't just on the wall, I was at the table. But to be able to be in that room and listen to Bob Lee talk about the different topics, the issues, the questions that he was going to ask these guests, how to interview. You know, even myself doing interviewing now, I still think about how Bob Lee interviews people and try to just be like 5% as good as this guy, because he's one of the best ever as far as interviewers that I've ever seen. And I attribute that all to that time, that 3-4 year span that I got to spend every single day in a meeting at the Outside the Lines, area that we would sit at before the show, and then in the studio with Bob for that amount of time. I mean, come on. I mean, that's a master's class in broadcasting and journalism that I got to have, and I got to get paid for it. So it was a pretty amazing experience. It was perfect for him.
And now after, like we were talking about with the legacy that he leaves behind, obviously, I'm sure that standard, I was just thinking about with ESPN, if you don't think that's a long time, I was in first grade when ESPN came on the air, and during a time when I just wonder about, I don't know if you had any stories, was there ever a time when the guys like Chris Berman and Bob Lee just retiring that they were worried if ESPN was going to make it?
I don't know. I mean, I remember when, when I was there, Chris and Bob were both still there. So I don't think there was a time when I was there that they were worried that ESPN was going to make it, especially at the end, because they had become such a giant conglomerate that I don't think that there was a moment where anybody thought that ESPN was going to crumble because Bob and Chris weren't there. But there's certainly a piece missing. Anytime you get two guys like that are no longer on TV every day, and boom, you'll occasionally see Chris Berman pop up here and there, and maybe for some things during the NFL season. He'll probably do the home run derby again in a couple of weeks. I don't know that for sure, but otherwise you just don't see them around as much, but their DNA is imprinted on every single aspect of where ESPN is. If you walk in those buildings, if you walk into the 17 plus buildings that exist on ESPN's campus, it's hard to keep walking without seeing some kind of imprint of Bob or Chris, and the effect that they had on that place. I mean, there's pictures too. I love it over near Studio E and Studio F and the Digital Center. There's pictures of the original Sports Center sets and seeing Bob and Chris on there in 1980 and 1981 and just what that was like. And I would always stop and look at those pictures when I would be in the hallways and just say, like, look where I'm working. It's kind of like I would liken it to a guy like who plays for the Yankees, and you walk through the halls and there's Babe Ruth and there's Lou Gehrig and there's all these sort of imprints on what that team is about and the history of the Yankees. Well, for me, that's what it was like to be at ESPN and see a Bob Lee and see a Chris Berman and think, man, they are the Babe Ruth and the Lou Gehrigs and those type of people for ESPN. They were. And I was fortunate to get to work with them on a daily basis and not just kind of see them from afar. So I saw the type of people that they were and the type of hard workers that they were.
Yeah, I was just talking about from the standpoint of when I said about if it would make it, like in 1979, being that the infancy of cable television, that if they would make, like if this is a brand new thing, would it make it? Because I remember there's the networks early in the early 80s that didn't make it.
Yeah, I apologize for not answering, I guess, the question or understanding it. But yeah, right. I think there was a time, it was a crazy idea, you know, and they had to get the backing of I think Getty Oil, if I remember correctly. And the ESPN book, the one that came out just a few years ago from Jim Miller, is a fantastic read, and I recommend people go on to see it because it really doesn't just look at the, you know, the lifestyle of ESPN, but it tells you how it almost didn't happen and how the idea for a all-sports network in 1978 to debut in 79 in this little area called Bristol, Connecticut, I mean, that's a crazy idea, and that was Bill Rasmussen's idea of seeing the future of broadcasting, and cable really was the big thing. And yeah, it almost, I mean, it had its hard times for many years. Bob and Chris tell great stories of what it was like back in the mid 80s and the early 80s to where they really weren't sure if this thing was going to make it. But all of a sudden, somewhere around, I think, 88, Chris Berman says, or 87, when ESPN got the rights to the NFL, that was when they said, I think this thing is going to be something for the long haul. And that's when they really took a leap into a different place as far as mainstream media and pop culture. And that was when they took off. But, yeah, it was not easy in those early days.
Do you have any idea how it came to be located in Bristol, Connecticut to begin with?
The guy who founded it, Bill Rasmussen, is from this area. And I think he was in the town next to Bristol called Plainville, and Southington are the three sort of surrounding towns next to Bristol. And this is where he was. So he originally wanted to start a local cable access channel here in Connecticut in this area. And I'm still here. That's why I talk about this area because I still live in Bristol. And he had this idea for a local cable access channel that then, you know, was told by a bunch of people, hey, you could do this for basically the same amount of money and be on this thing called cable. And so you could be seen by a lot more people. And then once they started to kind of establish themselves as a network, they stayed in Bristol because they saw the opportunity for expansion. You know, they built the studios on a bunch of wetlands, and it was this open area that they could build more, you know, build upon and build upon. If they were in New York or LA or Boston or any big city, you really have no space to build and build in the way that they were able to do that in Bristol. And so, yeah, that's why they ended up here. I think that's why they decided to stay here. There's always been imprints in other places, you know, First Take and Get Up, and a few of these other shows are in New York City, and Rachel Nichols and her NBA show and Sports Nation and a lot of those shows were out in Los Angeles. So there's ESPN studios there, but the home base, the mothership, if you will, is still in Bristol, and they spent a lot of money. And like I said, there's 17, 18 buildings now. It's a gigantic campus.
That's crazy to see somebody wanted to start a public access channel and it grew at the ESPN. I wanted to ask you kind of off topic, but – it's been a hot topic on our podcast, and maybe you don't have an opinion on it, and if you don't, just say, I don't have an opinion.
Sure.
We cover East Carolina primarily on our podcast. Everything else is secondary because of where we're located.
Okay.
We play in the American Athletic Conference. Obviously, you're in Connecticut. UConn just made the decision to leave the American and join the Big East. It's kind of put their football program in a predicament. Do you have any opinion on that at all?
I don't really have a ton of opinions on it, other than just I think, you know, I like this. I'm not a huge UConn fan. I mean, I didn't grow up in Connecticut. I grew up in New York.
Right.
So I'm not, like, attached to the team. I think if you live in Connecticut, like I have for almost 20 years, I think you realize that this team and this program means so much to this state, especially the basketball programs, especially the women's basketball program. I don't really have an opinion other than probably just saying it sounds better. It sounds right to have UConn in the Big East. It's not the same Big East as it used to be, but it's when I grew up, I remember Connecticut, St. John's, Pittsburgh, Syracuse, these teams that fought and battled in the Big East. When I was a kid, that was very influential on me. So I like hearing UConn back in the Big East. I really haven't done a ton of research on what it means or how it's going to affect different things, including the football program. But I think it just sounds right to have UConn playing, you know, sports in the Big East.
Just to fill you in on the football situation, they wanted to keep football in the American. Commissioner Rasko, at the urging of the other schools, told them, no, you cannot do that. So they are, as of in 2020, going independent in football unless they can find somebody to take them like the Mac. And the problem in 2020 is going to be there is not a single FBS school with an opening, and they need 8 games to fill their schedule out.
Oh man, wow! So, yeah. I didn't know all that. So that's interesting then, because you know the program had set itself up to keep growing and growing. They've had, you know, really rough years the last few years, and Dan Orlovsky's a good friend of mine, and Dan works at ESPN now, and of course played in the NFL and with UConn, and I know starting with him really working to put that program on the map, so that's not good at all, and it'll be interesting to see. I think that'll work out, but man, I don't know how. I mean, you might have to play some 1AA schools or some smaller schools. I shouldn't say 1AA because it's not in existence anymore, but they got to get something on the schedule, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
I want to shift gears and talk about I want you to promote your book again. I loved the last time.
Yeah.
That was one of the highlights, I thought, of the interview. And also, we wanted to ask you about how's the new book coming?
It's a good question. It's interesting. Well, thank you for letting me promote it. I think Live to Forgive is the name of my current book, and it's been out now for a little over a year. And I was just speaking at a church in Massachusetts a couple of weeks ago on Father's Day, and again, gave the message that I often give about forgiveness. But seeing people come up to me on a day like Father's Day, telling me, you know, the issues that they had with their father, or the issues that they were having with their kids, or forgiveness issues with a broken relationship. And, you know, I've since heard from a few of them about the book helping them, the story helping them. And, you know, that means so much to me. So, yeah, it's been an interesting journey these last, 17, 18 months on this book and being, you know, having people sort of read your life and entering into a place to try and practice forgiveness in their own life. It's been a real neat thing to be a part of, and I'm grateful for that. You asked about the second book. It's interesting because I just finished probably about 2 weeks ago the first draft of the second book, and it's going to be about leadership lessons that I learned from working at ESPN. So it's a lot lighter of a book, if you will, than a book about forgiveness and a broken relationship with my dad. But this book is going to be about stories and about what I learned from working at a place like ESPN. A lot of the stuff I just told you, you know, a few minutes ago, and reading the first draft and going through that with my co-author and kind of sharing the stories and ideas that I've had and some of the things that I've learned. I'm really excited about this book. It doesn't come out probably until, I would say, about a year from now, maybe 9 to 10 months from now in the spring of 2020. But I'm really pumped to see, you know, that this book, I think, can really enter into a place that can help a lot of people in the business world, leaders in any realm of leadership, sports, certainly, students and churches and places like that. So I'm really excited for people to read that story and hear, you know, some of the lessons that I learned from watching some of the greats that you would ever imagine seeing at ESPN. And one of the chapters is actually called, or at least tentatively called right now, The General's Wisdom, which is a whole chapter on what I learned from working with Bob Lee. And so it was really fascinating to have that chapter, reading that, putting that together, and then literally a couple days ago, Bob retires. So that's, I think, why, you know, Bob was on the forefront of my mind anyways as I'm putting this book together, and all of a sudden, you know, he retires, and that's going to have to be, you know, added into the book as well. So it's exciting for me to think about this second book because I have so many wonderful stories, and it's definitely not going to be this sort of tell-all, you know, bad things about ESPN type of book. That's not how I am. That's not what I'm about. But it's going to be about the lessons and the great moments that I've experienced and learned from some celebrities, you know, influencers, top sports people, and some names that you and others have never heard of, but that have a profound impact on me and my life and my career working at ESPN.
Jason, last time we had you on back in the spring, you shared a story or two regarding some of your colleagues there at ESPN, different Sports Center anchors and so forth. I was going to see if there's anything you could share, maybe about a Stuart Scott story, or one of the ones that really comes to mind is maybe it was a Sports Center commercial, or actually maybe in fact it was actually the show where Charlie Steiner just started laughing uncontrollably. And I think that was prior to your time there, but that's the one that really sticks in my mind.
I love the Charlie Steiner blooper, if you will. That's one of my favorites. I think Bob was on with him. It might not have been Bob. It might have been Jack Edwards when I think about it off the top of my head. But, you know, for me, the best stories, there's so many of them that I can't really narrow them down, but you spoke of one specific person, Stuart Scott, and I didn't work directly with Stu too often. I have some memories working on a Sunday when I was working on the NFL back in like probably 2000 and maybe 10, 11, 12 time frame. On Sundays, one of the great tributes and or one of the great treats that I had was I would get to go to work and sit in this giant war room, which is basically a conference room, and it was set up with rows of seats, and all of the ESPN NFL personalities would be in this war room with 12 TVs watching NFL games. And I was fortunate to be one of the maybe 30 people in that room on a Sunday watching all the NFL games. And I distinctly remember a couple times, you know, towards the end of the night, it would be around 5 or 6 o'clock, the games were ending at 7, Stu would walk into the war room, and people would turn around and look back and say, "Hey, Stu, what's up?" And we would just all kind of pay our respects to him when he'd walk in, and then he would sit in the front row with Chris Berman, and they would talk, and he would watch, you know, a second half of a game before he went to go do SportsCenter. And he was such a nice guy. He really was. I never saw a guy who was full of ego or anything like that. And I know, especially at the end, the last year or so, that he fought and battled with the cancer, and he still stayed on air as long as he could. Until June, I think, of 13 was his last show, and then he passed in, or June of 14, I think, and then he passed in January of 15. But he fought. And one last story is the day that he died, it was a Sunday, and it was a playoff game day. And I remember the Cowboys, which is my favorite team, were playing the Lions in a playoff game. This is 2014 season, 2015. January of 2015, and the Cowboys and Lions had a memorable game. Tony Romo threw a touchdown at the end, and they won. But that morning, as we were getting ready to go in and do our show on Sunday NFL Countdown, which is the show that I worked on at that time, I get a call from my boss, or a text, I guess, around 7 a.m., and he said, whatever you're posting on social media, because I was a social media director for the NFL at that point, social media producer, he said, just don't post anything for the next hour or two. Just kind of stay dark and don't post anything. And I said, okay, what's happening? What's going on? He said, I really can't share yet, but just come in the office and we'll talk about it. So I came in and everybody was there, and he came and he talked to me, and he told me that Stu had passed. And obviously we were all bummed and very saddened by it, and it was a very somber morning. But I remember Hannah Storm was the one that read the eulogy on the air. And so we're all in the studio, or read the news, I should say, not the eulogy, but the news on SportsCenter that Stuart had passed. And we were all in the NFL studio, everyone, Chris Mortensen, Tom Jackson, Chris Carter, Keyshawn Johnson, Chris Berman, even Matt Ryan happened to be there that day as a guest analyst from the Atlanta Falcons. And there's a picture I have somewhere, and we were all just kind of standing around. Nobody said a word, and we just watched Hannah make the announcement. And that told me so much about how much Stu was respected and how much of a family ESPN was. And even though I didn't have, not that I didn't have a bad relationship, I just didn't know Stu that well, but he was family. And no matter how, you know, we had 7,000 employees at ESPN, but he was one of us. And so when that news happened, we really all were you know, deeply saddened by it and wanted to pay respects and do the best job we could to honor Stu. And I've always admired him from afar, and I remember the booyah, you know, and the cooler than the other side of the pillow phrases from before I even got to ESPN. And so to have been able to work there during a time when he was there is an honor.
Jason, you've been very generous with your time, and we certainly appreciate it. Before we wrap this thing up, I had one more question. I know a couple of gentlemen that you've worked with, I'm pretty sure, are Tony Dungy. And then also Herm Edwards, two guys that I respect as Christian men, but then also as football coaches. Can you tell us about them? I know Tony's first book, I guess it was, Quiet Strength. It was an excellent read, and I would certainly want to read the second one as well.
Yeah, Tony is a I don't want to say a hero, but in many ways a hero, but a guy that I've had the pleasure of meeting multiple times. And the day that he came to ESPN in 2010 changed my life. I won't go deep into the story. It'll be the lead story in my new book. But in many ways, Tim challenging me as a Christian at ESPN allowed me to kind of go about my job in a different way. So I saw what everybody had talked about, you know, and sees from afar, this gentle giant of a man, this very confident man who was also graceful and kind and just loved people and loved God and never shied away from it and worked his faith into every answer and every conversation that he had. But he didn't ever did it in a threatening way or a forceful way. I love Tony Dungy, and I've been fortunate to be able to interview him on our podcast as well. And that was a true thrill to be able to interview him on Sports Spectrum and have him on our show. You asked about Herm Edwards. Herm is everything you would think about and more. He's probably my favorite. I don't want to say my favorite because there's been millions, but he's top three or four people that I ever worked with or was around at ESPN. Always full of energy, always positive. We all called him Coach, which was interesting because he hadn't coached in years. But we all called him Coach, and a dynamite guy who, for me, I had two really neat things that happened quickly I'll share with you with Herm. The first was in 2016, January of 16, or February of 16, the last Super Bowl that I covered for ESPN working on their NFL was the Broncos and Panthers Super Bowl. I think it was Super Bowl 50 in California. Well, I requested that day to the NFL bosses if I could have an NFL analyst to work with that day on the Super Bowl. And they gracefully gave me Herm Edwards. So I got to watch the Super Bowl by myself with Herm Edwards, just me and him in this room. And I was live tweeting from ESPN NFL Herm Edwards' thoughts on the Super Bowl. So in essence, I was his voice going out on the ESPN NFL Twitter feed. And I got to watch a game, just me and Herm. And it's different when you watch a game with a guy who played in the NFL, a guy who coached in the NFL, now, of course, he's coaching in college, who just knows the game and sees the game differently than I could have ever seen a game or know the game. And what a way to go out in my NFL journey at ESPN to be able to watch the Super Bowl alone with Herm Edwards. And one more story on Herm very quickly. About 2 weeks before I left ESPN, in January of 2017, Herm and I were at the airport together, not intentionally, but we were both going to Florida to cover the Pro Bowl. I was going with Mike and Mike, and Herm was going down just, you know, generally covering the Pro Bowl for ESPN, and Herm was going to be on our show. We sat down, and I told him about me leaving ESPN. I told him about, you know, the journey of going and doing more for God and kind of going into sports ministry. And without even saying anything, he just looked at me. He pulls out of his bag a Bible and a little quote on the top. And I don't remember the quote. I wish I did. But it was something that to the effect of God and grace and faith. And he shows it to me and he goes, I read this quote and open up this book every single day. He's like, keep doing what you're doing. And I didn't talk to Herm a lot about faith, you know, at ESPN. We were, you know, doing our jobs. But to hear that from him at that moment, just as a little bit of an encouragement, but to also know that this man was devout in his faith too, was awesome. So encouraging. So I love Herm and I love Tony.
Well, Jason, before we let you go, can you promote the book again and obviously tell folks where you are on social media?
Yeah. So again, the book's called Live to Forgive. It's on Amazon. It's on Books a Million and anywhere you can buy books. You can also get a free chapter, the first chapter of my book, for free at my website, jasonromano.com. And again, I really appreciate you guys having me on. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Just search my name, Jason Romano. I'd love to connect with you.
Absolutely. And one more thing about your podcast. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, the podcast has been going for about 2 years. It's a daily show, and we interview guests and athletes, people in the sports world, broadcasters, pastors, musicians, anybody that we can have on that can connect the world of sports with the world of faith. And I've been blessed to be able to be a part of this show now and interview over 300 people and some names that you know and some names that you don't know, but they all have the same story in many ways, which is their faith is central to who they are. And it's been a neat thing. You can get those everywhere podcasts are found, of course, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, Apple iTunes, and then at our website, sportsspectrum.com.
Jason, thank you so much with the retiring of Bob Lee coming on, and we love talking to you and all the great stories. And don't be a stranger. Love to have you back on real soon.
Guys, anytime you want to have me on, Dave, Bubba, Kyle, give me a shout. I really appreciate you guys having me, and I hope you have a great weekend. Thank you so much.
I didn't want that. I don't know about you, Kyle and Bubba. I didn't want that interview to stop. I really loved Jason does an excellent job. You can tell he's a radio guy, television guy. He does a podcast now. Very polished. He's very good at telling stories, and you really need that in broadcasting. And maybe one of these days I'll learn how to do that. But anyway, thanks,
Jason. Jason does a great job with his podcast, and he's an author and you know, a longtime producer at ESPN. So always good to have Jason on to talk about the legendary Bob Lee as he steps away from ESPN and in good health, it sounds like, and going to retire and do some other things. And so that's good to see a guy step down like that after being somewhere for 40 years and not for health reasons or anything, just because it's time to go.
You made a great point, Kyle, in the interview about how people, there's some people, unfortunately, I remember I was a huge fan of Johnny Carson. He left on top. David Letterman left on top as far as talk shows. And you look at Johnny Carson, they ask him why he left when he was still, like, obviously in his prom, and he could have done the show probably another handful of years or whatever. He said that he saw his idol, Jack Benny, the way that, who had a show back in the day, way back in the day, early days of television. He stayed too long, and CBS pretty much fired a legend, you know, and he didn't want to be like that. So the same thing for Bob Lee. Bob Lee left on his own, and it's great that you can leave on top of your game, outside the lines, is what a great show. And he was perfect for it. And he's one of those guys, when you're a six-year-old kid or you're a teenager or now you're in your 40s, you look up to him, admire him, respect him, because he does fantastic work. And, you know, all good things must come to an end. You just hate that it's with a guy like him, because there's a lot of people that are and don't even deserve to be at ESPN or any other broadcasting network. A guy like him, it's going to be hard. It's big shoes to fill, but I don't think you ever really replace a Bob Lee, because he's a fixture there. And I know he'll enjoy retirement, and I know that, like you said, Kyle, he could do other things on Netflix or different things, that I'm sure he'll be doing something else very soon.
Yeah, and it sounds like to me from the interview, maybe he's going to be a professor at Seton Hall.
That would be great. He's from New Jersey, so great stuff there. And I can't imagine taking a class with Bob Lee. I would definitely be nervous, because I like him so much and look up to him, admire and respect him. So anyway, Bob Lee, good luck in retirement, and certainly we look for you. As you said, we'll look for you on the flip side. That's what he said. So look for me on the flip side. We'll look for you on the flip side, and we'll see what you got going coming up. I tell you what, I don't know where Bubba is, but I guess
I'm here.
There he is. All right. Bubba, I was going to tell you that as far as I know, there's a lot of great things with Pirates going on right now in the pros. Did you want to talk about that?
Yeah, they are. This weekend, Harold Varner was playing up in Detroit I'm trying to remember the name of the event, but unfortunately Harold missed the cut. He didn't play terribly. He it's a par 72 course, and Harold shot 71-71, so he was 2 under par through two rounds, and he missed the cut by 3 shots. But you know, some other news along the baseball front. We had Seth Maness. Seth got picked up a couple months ago by the Texas Rangers organization, and he is out in AAA with the Nashville Sounds. So Seth has been pitching very well, and he made the All-Star game in that AAA league. And then you also have, of course, very recently, Spencer Brickhouse and Bryant Packard were drafted, and those guys are performing very well thus far. Spencer Brickhouse was drafted in the 7th round by the Arizona Diamondbacks, and he is up in rookie ball with the Missoula Osprey. And so he is batting .333. He's 10 out of 30 and 4 doubles. So good for Spencer. And then also Bryant Packard, he was, of course, drafted in the fourth round by the Detroit Tigers. And Pack is 5 of 13 thus far for the Connecticut Tigers, which are in the low A ball. So 5 of 13 for Pack, and good for Bryant Packard. Both of those guys signed for right what their slot value was. I think Pack actually signed for a little bit more, right around $395,000. And Spencer Brickhouse signed for about $190,000, which was just below his slot value.
Well, very excited for what they've already accomplished in the short term, and tremendous players, and we wish them the best. Always a Pirate. And
hey, guys, got some breaking news here.
Okay.
We have a new offensive analyst on the staff. Former Miami quality control coach and one-time Virginia Tech offensive lineman, Greg Nosal, N-O-S-A-L, has taken over as the new offensive analyst. Bubba, hold on.
Was that through ECU football's account? Or?
This was posted on Hoist. ECUPirates.com has just added him to the website. He officially joined the staff on June 17th. He previously served at Miami. Like I said, he played at Virginia Tech. He will be the offensive analyst for our staff.
No, what I was going to bring up when I was talking about Pro Pirates, this is actually the first one I meant to mention, and that was Dominique Davis, of course, who quarterbacked the 2010 and 2011 Pirates those first 2 years under Coach Ruff and Lincoln Riley. And Dominique's up in the CFL with the Ottawa Red Blacks, and he has performed very well thus far in 2 games. He's completed something like 59 of 83 passes, so a little over 70%, and he's thrown for something like 650 yards. So good for Dominique, and we'll have to continue to follow him as well as the other Pirates in the CFL.
And I want to mention, by the way, folks, Bubba's agreed he's going to be on the ship next year. We're going to have the Sports Objective Pirate Cruise. I know, Kyle, you're excited about it, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, actually. I haven't been on a cruise, something I've wanted to do and just haven't done. And I think Jessica and I are going to take the opportunity this time around with the cruise, Dave, that you and your travel agent are putting together and, go on it. And I love the opportunity, the way this is going to be done, where if you don't want to put it on, you always have the opportunity to put it on a credit card and pay it off slowly and,
yep.
But you can pay interest. But it sounds like we're going to be able to just make payments directly to the travel agent over the next several months without having to worry about paying interest.
That's right. Dana's great. She'll work with you on however she wants you to feel comfortable. And so if you say, I'm the kind of person, I want to give you $100 or $200 a month, once a month kind of payment, running my card on the 5th, she'll run your card on the 5th for, say if it was $200 for a payment or $100 or whatever. Or if you're like me, where all of a sudden, Dana, I've got some extra money, I want to pay off this trip, can you run my card for $300 or $400, whatever, to help, get it paid off quicker? She'll do that. She's just fantastic. I love the fact that one of the things, guys, I want to mention, and not to get too deep in it, is about the cruise, but I love the fact that there's a lot of websites and different places that will tell you, oh, it's only $400 for the cruise. And then what you find out is, well, you don't read the fine print, and all of a sudden it's $300 or $400 extra of what you thought. So
do we have the cost yet for this trip, David? Do we have that yet?
We do. We have, I will tell you, we need to put that up on the we'll do that this weekend, folks. We have right now rooms for interior rooms. Those are obviously meaning no windows. That's the cheapest rooms you can get. We also have ocean view rooms, and we have balcony rooms Okay. I'm definitely.
Do you have the information on the pricing or in front of you or not?
Yeah, I do. Let me. It's on my. Actually, I sent it to you, Kyle. Actually, and Bubba.
You did? You emailed it. Okay. I don't check my email most of the time. So.
I can send it to you on the text if you'll give me a second. So keep talking about how great the cruise is. Hang on.
Yeah, the cruise is great, Bubba. So are you coming, Bubba?
To be determined.
Did you tell Stacy about it?
Not yet, no.
That's going to be the ticket. Stacy's going to probably want to do this. Suddenly she'll want to do a pirate activity.
Yeah. You throw in a trip to the Bahamas like that.
Suddenly,
you know what?
She loves the pirates.
And she loves the pirates. She loves those
podcasts.
You know
what? You know what, Bubba? This could be your opportunity, though. She goes on that cruise and gets to know former pirate players and, you know, gets to hang out with Kyle from LaGrange. It'll be a big perk for her. That'll make her love Carolina.
She might hate it worse. Hate it more.
Maybe. Possibility. All right, so we got our interiors. Our interior stateroom is 606.
Right.
606 per, well, it's my phone will do, right? 606 per person based on double occupancy, or 741 per person, including prepaid gratuities.
Yeah, highly recommend that. That's basically what it means. You have to tip this. For the folks who have been on, they'll know this, but if you haven't, I'll explain it. The gratuities is where you're paying for the person that's cleaning your room for the week. It's like a little over $100 a person. Go ahead and pay that in advance. You won't miss that $100. That way, when you get on the cruise, it's one less thing you have to worry about. You get on the ship. If you don't do it, you have to pay it at the end of the week, and then you have to worry about having that extra $100 when if you go ahead and pay for it. That's what I'm saying. She goes ahead and gets the prices out there for you. The other one is travel, the travel insurance. Travel protection, I think it's a fancy term. Basically, what that means is you pay about $100 a person. And the great thing about that, if something happens where you can't make the cruise, you're able to move the dates. You can get most of your money back. So you're not out, say, $2,000 or $1,600 or whatever.
Do you have to purchase that travel insurance at the time you make your reservations, or can it be purchased at a later date?
It can be for a later date, absolutely, up until a certain time before the cruise. So you don't have to do that now. You could say, Dana, I just want to do this right now,
right,
and we'll do the other stuff later on.
And your ocean view rooms is going to be $681.52 per person. If you go ahead and include your gratuity, it's going to be $816.48 per person. And for the balcony view, the Bubba Rosenbaum suite will be $791.50 per person with the gratuity included, $942.48 per person. And that's for the high-end room. To me, looking at this, I would say your ocean view room is your best value because it's really not that much more than your interior stateroom, and you get the ocean view. Though, then again, do you really need it? Because you're on the damn cruise ship. You can see the ocean anytime you want to.
Yeah.
When you're in your room, I'm assuming the only time you really go to your room when you're on a cruise ship is to go to sleep. Or maybe something else.
Yeah, the rooms are not bad, but I would say the one good thing about the ocean view and the balcony, it does help when you feel like the room is more like the size of a – it's not the size of a hotel room. I'm not saying that, so don't misunderstand me. But it makes you feel like it's bigger than it is.
Now, are the interior rooms smaller than the ocean view rooms?
I think they're about the same. The difference is just simply the – you have more of an open – obviously with the window, it's like a little porthole.
Now, forgive my ignorance, Dave. Are bathrooms included in these rooms?
Yes, they are. They are tiny. They're tiny.
I'm a big guy with a big guy in a tiny bathroom. Sounds like a sketch for comedy.
Yeah, and they have a small shower there, so you've got that. But
oh wow, well, that's not good.
Yeah.
How big are the beds in these rooms, Dave? Are they? Is it two double beds, one queen bed, one king bed?
It's pretty much like two doubles.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, they say queen, but it's not queen size like what we
It's a small queen. I got what you mean.
Small queen, yeah, exactly. So I want to make that very clear. And the great thing about it is once you pay for this stuff being inclusive, then when you pay for the stuff up front, except for your gambling, alcohol, pictures, and like the spa. And they also have excursions you can go on the thing. I think it's day three. We're going to go to Nassau, so you'll get a chance to go there for the day and check things out. Again,
many days at sea and how many days in the actual island? It's a 4-day cruise. Are we just going to do one day?
One day
at the Bahamas, and then the rest of the time we're going to be in the ocean.
Correct. We'll be cruising.
Okay. We'll be cruising. Okay. and lots of food, lots of drink, all included. Aren't things open all night on the cruise ship? Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's a time, I think, when maybe the casino shuts down a little bit, but a lot of that stuff is open all the time, and they even have, like, midnight buffets, and they...
All right. You'll find me at the midnight buffet.
You'll be there?
Oh, my fat ass will be there. Bubba, will you be at the midnight buffet?
Perhaps.
He's going to be there hanging out with us, laughing around.
No, I know the first and only time I've been on a cruise, we had had so much going on after getting married. We actually didn't go a day or two afterwards. We went about a week afterwards, but we were still exhausted. We had driven down to Tampa, and so we got on the ship about 4:00, got to our rooms 4:30 or 5:00, and just lied down, and then all of a sudden, next thing we knew, we woke up and it was like 11:30, and we had missed supper, so we went to eat pizza and lemonade.
Yeah, you can.
Right.
They serve pizza 24 hours a day. They even have ice cream 24 hours a day.
All right. How was the pizza, Bubba? When y'all went
it was fine. It was all right.
Good.
It wasn't bad.
It
was Carnival and the cruise line.
Yeah.
We were.
And that's what
now,
we're going on, by the way.
The
Carnival
good thing about this, you don't have to go to Tampa. Just scoot down to Charleston. Yeah.
One of my favorite cities, like Kyle, we can.
Yes. Charleston's a great city.
Get out of the port. The other thing, expense you may have, folks, to let you know is that, but it's actually a good thing. They have a warehouse where they store all the cars, and it's like $90 for the cruise while you're gone. But the good news, it's not like you're leaving your car or vehicle on a city street and wonder if you've got wheels coming back or.
Right. I wondered about that. If there was parking,
Yeah, they have this huge warehouse and they store all the cars in there. I believe if handicap parking is free, I'll have to go back and look at that, but I think I'll double check on that. But
well, I'm going to have to get a handicap placard from somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm joking. Rachel, if you're listening, I'm joking. I would never do that.
No, you would not do that. But anyway, I just want people to come on board. I think my family alone, we got 6 cabins, so we got a lot of us there. So it's going to be great. And Dana is on vacation right now. She'll be back around, I guess, after the 4th. So she'll be back. But we're going to definitely, as soon as she gets back, we're going to open everything up where people can go ahead and make deposits. The deposits are not too bad. It's so much per person. I don't even know what it is for this one. But we'll have everything rolled out. And she's going to come on the podcast. She said she's excited. She's going to come on, and so she'll explain all
what is the name of her travel agency, Dave?
It's Dana's Global Travel. So you can Google Dana's Global Travel.
Is she out of Williamson or Greenville or where?
No, she's actually, she was living in Cary, but they moved. They have a house she works out of her home in Fuquay Varina. So
Fuquay, okay.
They have a nice house there. And so she's there and she's available and being able to take good care of folks. I'm just excited about it because something I wanted to do for the podcast when we first started, but obviously we were not ready at the time. And we had to wait until we had people listening, and we're going to have a social that night, one of the nights. She's working with Carnival right now, where we're going to have one of the clubs we'll have for like 2 hours. And being pirates, and we love to party and have a good time. And if you don't, even if you don't drink, you can come and hang out with us and meet people, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So we'll get a chance to meet.
Now, alcohol is not included, right? That is the one thing that costs more.
Correct. The best way I can tell folks is $50 per day per person. If you, in other words, if you get, it's called a drink package. If you get the drink package, every person in the cabin has to purchase it. So if it's 2 people and one person doesn't drink, well, both people will have to purchase that.
Is that the only option to drink?
you can actually do a la carte where you pay for, you know, as you go.
Okay.
So alcohols, and I would highly recommend that. The drinks aren't bad like you would think they would be on the cruise. They're actually more comparable to what we're used to paying. So for a cocktail, so I wouldn't, or a beer, whatever, so I wouldn't worry about.
No, Jessica doesn't drink, so the buying the drink package would not be a good financial decision for me, so I will do a la carte.
And Dave, I'll say, correct me if I'm wrong, since I have only been on that one cruise, but if I recall correctly, it seems as though soft drinks are included in that as well,
yeah.
Right? Because I know lemonade, I think it was like lemonade and sweet tea and water were my only options,
really?
Or something.
So soft drinks are not free. Okay.
No, they're not. Basically, you pay per day. They have a soft drink package, and you're looking at maybe $2 or $3. Now that, on the other hand, I think is a good deal, unless you don't drink soft drinks, sodas, because they charge maybe, I think, $7 a day. And after two or three of those, if you have like three a day, you've definitely got your money's worth and then some.
Can you buy these packages on the ship? Can I buy a soft drink package?
Or you can do it beforehand.
Package? No, but can I do it? If one day I decide I want to get really drunk, can I decide, hey, I'm going
to do it? I see. I think you have to buy it for the whole cruise, I think. We'll double check with Dana, but I'm pretty sure.
So it's $50 per person for the whole cruise.
$50 per day per person. So,
oh.
Yeah, and you have a limit of, I think, 13 drinks. I don't know how anybody could drink 13 drinks, but I guess it's possible.
Let me tell you something, Dave. I did it the other night, but that's a different story for a different podcast.
Sure thing. So anyway, folks, I want to remind you to we'll put it up on our social media or Facebook, and we'll tweet it out, the information. We'd love for people to come. And we've been talking to former Pirate players and different people and Pirate fans, and people have been excited about it. So we'll see how many folks we have. But I think by going to Charleston, by doing the four-day to keep the price as low as we can, I think that more people will definitely participate than if we try to be too exotic and fly out of a certain port like I did last year.
I think Charleston, Norfolk would have been even better, but they don't go out of Norfolk very often. So I think Charleston's a good choice.
So we'll get you more information when Dana gets back, and we'll obviously be talking about it, but definitely wanted to mention that. And I know, Bubba, Friday morning football is going to be tremendous this year that we're going to start up in a few weeks.
Yeah, really looking forward to Friday morning football, talking high school, college, and pro football. We'll have a variety of guests, whether it's players, coaches, sports writers, what have you. In addition to Friday morning football, on July 12th through August 30th, we'll have our 50 Pirates 50 Days feature, where you're going those 50 days up until kickoff and the start of the Mike Houston era. So we'll catch up with a large number of players, but maybe also a few coaches as well. And then also here, even in the more near future, we're going to have a couple of tremendous guests on next week, and we'll be catching up with East Carolina Director of Athletics, John Gilbert, and we'll also hear from one of the most highly respected, or arguably the most highly respected football prognosticator and preview magazine producer, and that's Phil Steele.
He is the most, yes.
Looking forward to those guests. We're adding people all the time. It's hard between all of us working hard on these guests. It's really hard to Bubba spearheading things. We all come up with ideas and that. So, Bubba,
well,
thank
Phil
you.
Phil Steele and John Gilbert in the same week, man. It's a big week.
It really
yes,
is.
Sir.
Working, we'll work on other people as well that we got behind the scenes that were finalized. Gentlemen, do you have anything before we go? I know we've been talking a lot, and definitely a lot to talk about, but definitely we'll leave more for later on. What do you say?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope everybody has a great, this is our weekend podcast we'd like to do. So hope everybody has a tremendous weekend. Please be safe, as we need everybody in Pirate Nation, as many as we can. And until next time, you've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.